Okay, so here's a real-world clinical scenario. You're on call in labor and delivery, and you get the phone call that happens not infrequently. Hey, you have a patient here who she ruptured several hours ago, and she's still here. By the way, her cervix is like 225 and like minus 3. In other words, unfavorable cervix. How would you like to proceed? Well, that's the focus of this episode because traditionally, of course, for an unripe cervix, we have pharmacological agents, mainly prostaglandin-based, whether E1 or E2, or we have mechanical methods like either the Foley balloon, which we've covered on this episode, whether it's a 30 ml, 60 ml, we've talked about all that, or a double balloon like the Cook cervical balloon. Not a sponsor. So we've got pharmacological and we've got balloon. Remember, this is a patient with pre-labor rupture of membranes with an unfavorable cervix. How would you proceed? Now, it's not unusual, of course, to pick maybe some Cytotec to ripen the cervix, or if your facility is using a mechanical method like a single or a double balloon, okay, hey, knock yourself out. But what does the data show? Would you be surprised to find out that the best option seems to be just going straight to PIT? Or is that what you're doing already? We're going to talk about it in this episode. Plus, we're going to review the original indication of the Bishop score and why applying that to patients who are ruptured is actually not how it was intended to be used. Oh man, that's going to rock some people. Now, I'm not saying not to use it. I'm saying use it as a way to grade cervical progression once you give her Pitocin or once she changes spontaneously, but as an indication of need for pre-induction cervical treatment, when they're ruptured, that actually was not how it was intended to be used. Crazy. So we're going to discuss all of this with a focus on mechanical methods with pre-labor rupture of membranes. So this goes all the way back to the 90s, and we're going to end with a recent RCT from April 2023. Yep, just 1 year ago in the Gray Journal. The idea for this actually came from several discussions really over the past year. People have asked, hey, our institution is thinking about using a double balloon with patients that are PROM. Is that evidence-based? What about infection? And then just last night, a good buddy of mine from Orange County, I know him professionally. I find him to be super evidence-based, super caring. He's dedicated, a great physician in the OC. See, in OC, in Texas, that means Oak Cliff. That's my old stomping grounds in Dallas. But the real OC is Orange County, of course, in California. And so he sent me this message, hey, what is going on here with the balloon and ruptured patients? It's contraindicated by label, but some hospitals are doing it as a way to decrease C-sections and otherwise nulligravid term singleton vertex babies called NTSV C-sections, trying to reduce those numbers. Is this a valid thing? The data is pretty wild. So we're going to cover all this. It's going to be a little journey. Get ready, kids, because it's going to be up and down and side to side, but we're going to land eventually at the finish line, and then we'll give some real-world clinical implications. Because here's the first clinical pearl before we even launch this thing off. You can pull out any one study. Okay, we've talked about this before. One study who goes, oh my goodness, this thing is like better than sliced bread. I mean, sliced bread is... that's nothing. This thing is the bomb. This is the way to go. You can pull out any individual study. The question is, does it hold up to the burden of evidence? So if the needle is at one, like in a confidence interval, does the entire body of literature push it towards one way or the other, benefit or no benefit? And that's what we're going to get to in this episode. So we're going to discuss systematic reviews, one from 2021 from the Gray Journal. We're going to talk about retrospective studies, RCTs on this, and then we're going to give some clinical implications and what the data say, not what I say, but what the data suggest is the best management for patients with pre-labor rupture of membranes, all right? Should it be just going straight to PIT? Should it be an E1, an E2 prostaglandin? Should it be mechanical? Should it be both? We're going to let the data decide. And once again, I'm not trying to dissuade anybody from doing one thing or the other. I'm just letting the data speak and let it speak to you. Let it talk to you. All right, that's gotten weird. All right, let's get on with the show. Just trying to keep everyone up to date on evidence-based practice because medicine moves real fast. This is Clinical Pearls.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So first, let's just do the obvious pre-labor rupture of membranes. I'm sure everybody gets that now. It's just what it's used, especially if you're in residency now and you don't know any different. It's PROM is pre-labor rupture of membranes. Super descriptive, right? I mean, you have ruptured membranes before labor. Mind-blowing. That's what the term should have been all along. However, when I was a resident and for like my buddy in Orange County, I'm sure he trained with this, it was premature rupture of membranes. Now, premature meant premature in the time span of the labor process. All like you broke your bag of water prematurely, you haven't really started contractions yet. That was premature rupture of membranes. You can see how the term premature freaked people out, right? You're like, well, what do you mean I have premature rupture of membranes? I'm like 40 weeks and 5 days. No. It's premature in terms of labor progress, not gestational age. Super confusing. And then you had preterm premature rupture of membranes. So then you're like, huh? Well, how's that even different than regular preterm rupture of membranes? So it was super confusing. So you think that these terms have been around forever. They have not. It wasn't until 2018 when ACOG Practice Bulletin number 188 changed that term, right? So it's still PROM, but of course it went from premature rupture of membranes to pre-labor rupture of membranes, which was much better, which implies rupture of the bag at term. And then you have PPROM, preterm pre-labor rupture of membranes, of course, under 37 weeks. And then the super early stuff like periviable or near viable, but that's not the focus of this topic. What we're going to talk about here is assuming pre-labor rupture of membranes, mainly at term, because that's where most of the data is, although there is data where balloon mechanical dilation was used at or above 34 weeks. So usual protocols, typically based on where you're at, some people restrict it to use at 37 weeks or above. In cases of PROM, if that's being done at their institution, some go all the way down to 34 weeks. There is data on both sides, all right? So in terms of do you have to wait for one or the other, that depends on your institution. There's not firm evidence one way or the other, but it's legit if you're going to do it either at 34 weeks or 37, if your institution has done that. The question is, what is the data? Is it worth doing that? What does the data show? Are we going to get them delivered shorter than we would have given them, let's say, a prostaglandin for cervical ripening or balloon by itself or with a secondary agent like a prostaglandin or straight Pitocin? Remember, put this into context. We're talking of a patient with pre-labor rupture who has an unripe cervix by Bishop score, and then what to do, specifically focusing on the balloon. What's the data with the balloon? And this is not about Cook balloon, guys. This can be a Foley, whether 30 or 60 cc's. It could be the Cook balloon. It doesn't matter. The idea is mechanical. That's the topic here. So I'm not trying to give any love or throw under the bus, whichever way you look at it, the Foley balloon or Cook. I'm talking about mechanical processes for cervical, quote, unquote, ripening with an unripe cervix with pre-labor rupture of membranes at term or over 34 weeks. So pre-term, pre-labor rupture. Okay? Just want to be clear. That's what we're talking about here. Because the data is super interesting. And like I said, I've had people throughout the last 1 to 2 years send me messages, hey, we're doing this. I'm not really seeing a benefit. What does the data show? Because we're concerned about infection. And that's a great quality initiative in your hospital. If a hospital institution is going to implement this, again, either at 34 or 37 weeks for PROM, you need to track that. You need to have somebody assign that to a resident, assign that to a medical student, assign that to a QAPI. If you're like, what the heck's a QAPI? Oh my goodness. And you really need to get to some reading. QAPI is a quality metric to unify standard practices in labor and delivery. You need a QAPI score on that and do a QAPI review to see if your rates of intra-amniotic infection have gone up. And ideally, it's just that and not postpartum metritis and not neonatal infection. OK, Okay, so you see how all of these things to consider, right? One of the concerns about using a balloon with PROM is not just IAI, intramyotic infection, is that it passes to the kid, which is neonatal infection / sepsis, and then postpartum infection or metritis. Now, just to say it right off the bat, even though we're going to cover some of this data, neonatal infection and postpartum metritis, much less of a worry than IAI, which has been shown in some publications, even with trending, to have a rate of rise that's significantly higher, 2 to 3-fold with mechanical methods with PROM compared to a pharmacological agent, all right? And the reason that neonatal infection and postpartum metritis typically don't rise is because when you suspect IAI, you're going to get ahead of it. You're going to treat that. Right, so you can get ahead of it to try to give the baby some therapeutic load of antibiotics so it doesn't come out sick. So it's caught ideally early. But of those three factors, IAI, neonatal infection, and postpartum metritis, it seems to be IAI has the biggest bump. Okay, and we haven't even gotten to the data yet. I'm just setting the stage, okay? And so I mentioned this in the intro. Would you be surprised to find that according to, and there's not a lot of data, guys, let's be honest, when patient has PROM, there's not a whopping amount of evidence that says, wow, an E1 or an E2 agent for the unripe cervix is the way to go. Remember, this is only an issue for the unripe cervix. If they rupture and they're like barely contracting, but they're 4 to 5 in a multip, I mean, damn, give her some pitch. She's gonna sneeze, hopefully, and push the kid out, hopefully. It's that nulliparous patient who comes in ruptured, who's 1 to 2 centimeters, and you're like, ugh, because you're like, here we go. My anal sphincter feels it. I hope yours does too. If not, then I know I'm super type A. I know that. But I'm like, oh my goodness, this poor woman. Number one, are we sure she's ruptured? Well, the fluid coming out of her vagina says so. Great. And her amniture, her rump plus says so. Well, great. Okay, so assuming that she's cephalic, has no contraindications to vaginal delivery, and all of the rest of it, and the baby has a reassuring status, then the typical question from nursing staff, of course, and or your team is, well, are we going to ripen or not? Great question. And the data is pretty sad. Honestly, whether it's E1 or E2 analog, it doesn't seem to do very much as opposed to going straight to Pitocin. You're like, I can't believe that. Where is that from? Oh, I'm going to tell you in a minute. Hold on, Junior. Hold on a minute. Don't rush it. Because the data says it kind of doesn't do much. It kind of has the same delivery time as going straight to PIT. Now, let me just throw this out here now. I'm totally off the outline because I can't help myself. I'm going to get into the data, yes. But listen to this. The idea for the Bishop score, the original 5-member Bishop score, dilation, effacement, station, consistency, and position, not the modifieds and all these weird stuff that now we're doing, you know, just doing the 3 and then putting in a BMI and all, that's not the original. The original is 5, okay? The original Bishop score was to gauge response to Pitocin in the uninitiated cervix. Did y'all get that? In the uninitiated cervix. It was, what's the chance if I give you PID, it's going to respond? That's it. And uninitiated meant, hey, they haven't gone through labor, they're not ruptured, and so what's the chance that they're going to respond to Pitocin, or should we give them prostaglandins, which upregulates Pitocin receptors, helps with gap junctions, helps with calcium influx, it helps with breaking up the matrix of the cervix, the matrix, that's cool, right? The matrix, to get the cervix more favorable. So Bishop score is legit, absolutely, for grading response to Pitocin in the uninitiated cervix. The rebuttal has been, hey, if she's ruptured the cervix, whether it wants to or not, that process is initiated. Hence the pre-labor rupture of membranes, because just breaking that bag by itself releases prostaglandins. That's why early amniotomy, if it's indicated, sometimes it's a thing, together with Pitocin. We've talked about that many times in this episode, how that's fluctuated from, oh my gosh, don't do it, to, well, yeah, maybe you can do it, along with Pitocin, to shorten labor. That's gone both ways, okay? That's flip-flopped in and of itself. And you can listen to that. I think that was in the management of first and second stage of labor that we did, I think, like in January. So that's fluctuated. But the idea is when the bag of water ruptures by itself, that release of prostaglandins plus that rapid decompensation of the uterus, decompensation, decompression of the uterus. Guy kind of does like the balloon, right? Is up, up, boom. It brings a leak. Uterus kind of comes down a little bit. That mechanical decompression also helps initiate calcium influx and helps with the process of labor. That's why at term, initiation of spontaneous labor is inversely related to gestational age. Do y'all get that? So initiation of spontaneous labor is inversely related to gestational age, meaning the further along the patient is, the shorter the latency. The earlier the patient is, the longer the latency. So initiation of spontaneous labor is inversely related to gestational age because it sets the process up if the uterus is adaptable, meaning already further along at term. Thankfully, if it happens early, that lag, that latency is longer because the uterus is not adaptive to term. There's no pit receptors, gap junctions aren't really there, and so we can buy some time with latency antibiotics. Everybody with me? So the Bishop score was meant to be used as a way to quantify who needed PICT, P induction cervical treatment, PICT, whether that was an E1 like Cytotec or an E2 like Prepadil or Dinoprostone. Okay, so that was the idea. But if it's ruptured, there really hasn't been any evidence that a Bishop score really is helpful. Now, I know you're thinking, what in the world are you talking about? Of course we use a Bishop score when she comes in. If she comes in ruptured, she's 38 weeks, 39 weeks, we want to see what her Bishop is. I get that. And we do that as well. The ideal way to use a Bishop score is to say, hey, right now her Bishop is 5. We're going to give her PIT. We're going to give her Pitocin, even though it's under 6, which technically is unfavorable. Let's make it easier. Her Bishop score is 4, all right? Clearly unfavorable, unripened. We're going to give her PIT, and then we're going to track cervical progression in the latent phase by tracking her progression of Bishop. See, now it's used as a prognostic marker versus who needs a pre-induction cervical treatment or not. Now, this is not my thing, guys. I'm not saying not to use Bishop. I'm saying to use it for the right indication. And if ruptured, there seems to be data that you just pretty much need to go straight to PIT because using a prostaglandin in the case of that ruptured membrane where there's already this endogenous little milieu of prostaglandins and that little uterine decompression, all that that's typically going to do is freak the uterus out with a weird non-pitable pattern. Let me explain. How many times, and it happens to me frequently, and I'm not upset at the resident, I'm not upset at the other attending, I'm upset at the uterus for behaving that way. I'm like, shame on you, uterus, what's wrong with you? I don't say that to the uterus, but I do internally. So here's the typical story, right? We take over a call, say it's 7 or 7:30, and I get the call, hey, there's a lady on the board. Guys, let me be real. Does this not happen? Tell me this does not happen to you. 7 and 7:30, you get the call. Hey, there's a lady. She came in last night. She's been on the board now for like 8 hours because whatever. Pick a term date. She's 37 and 5, clearly ruptured, cephalic, otherwise low risk, non-herpetic. Baby strip looks good, non-preeclamptic, non-diabetic, right? She's just, let's call her low risk. But she's clearly ruptured, and she declined expectant management for 12 to 24 hours. We're going straight to induction of some type. That's the right thing to do. If the patient wants to wait, absolutely, that's their prerogative. But 12 hours, you got to have another, you know, sit down discussion. And at 24, you're like, honey, your time's up. Your chance of infection that can pass through the child is greatly elevated. So we got to get off the pot because no one's pooping here. So we got to get off the pot. Right? What is it? Poop or get off the pot? Follow me, right? Yes, right, Mike? That's it. Poop or get off the pot. Or we got to do something else. So ACOG says, hey, that's allowed. You can give them a choice. That's now patient autonomy. But the traditional, the medical recommendation should be, especially at term, hey, if you're ruptured, we need to get going. We want to get on top of this to prevent infection because infection leads to neonatal infection. Infection for you leads to increased risk of postpartum hemorrhage. Infection for you leads to a uterus that doesn't contract well and increases the risk of C-section. So we should go right now. But they have a choice, all right? 12 to 24 if they desire. But in this case that we're giving here, okay, she wanted to go straight for induction, which is the medically preferred, and she got one dose of Cytotec, 25 micrograms vaginally. Remember, ruptured membranes is not a contraindication to vaginal application of medication because it's not a cervical check, Okay, so you just put it into the vagina, in the posterior fornix, not intracervical instrumentation. So you can do it into the vagina. And then guess what happens? And oh, she got one dose and she went into this weird, you know, couplets of contractions. It's just not a traditional contraction pattern. She's contracting too much for another dose and she's contracting too much for a Pitocin. So she's been sitting there. Does that happen to you all? You're like, guys, you got one 25 microgram. It's been 8 hours. Now, maybe it's not that long, but does that not happen to you? And meanwhile, so now we've got a lady who's now been 8 hours, who got one dose. Well, we can't give her another dose because she's over-contracting the protocol. And we can't give her PIT because she's over-contracting the PIT protocol. And so we're watching the water boil. We're like, okay, this is why, according to the data, it's giving a patient who's ruptured, especially at term, where this uterus is already has this subclinical kind of irritability, giving a medication that is non-titratable can get you into this bind. Now, if it works, and boom, you give her one Sativex, she goes from 1 centimeter to 5. Fantastic. That happens. Just doesn't happen a lot. Now, I'm serious. Does this not happen to you when you're like, oh, great, she got how many doses? She only got one. And we haven't given her another one because we can't do anything. Man, there is evidence that going straight to Pitocin is the best because you can titrate that. And the issue here sometimes becomes our own bias as providers. We're like, man, we're going to give her PIT. She's not responsive. Her uterus is not, quote, unquote, favorable. But that term was for the uninitiated cervix, not when they're ruptured. And so she's going to take forever. Well, she's going to take forever if you give her one Sativex and you have to watch her for 6 to 8 hours anyway because she freaked out her uterine pattern. Does that make sense? So I want to be very clear. I am not saying that giving Cervidil, I am not saying that giving Sativex per vagina or orally or whatever is contraindicated with ruptured membranes. It absolutely is not. The question is, does that increase the time to delivery? Increase the effectiveness of time to delivery, reduce the time interval to delivery with this agent versus straight Pitocin. And the data, guys, I'm going to tell you the data is unclear. It's almost like no, but that could be because right now there's not a lot of data on that. Remember that in epidemiology and in academic medicine, there's a great quote, which is something like lack of evidence does not correlate to lack of effectiveness. Does that make sense? Lack of evidence does not directly correlate to lack of effectiveness because somebody has to do the data in order for it to prove it's effective. So just because there's a scant amount of evidence that giving an E1 or E2 to an unripe cervix with PROM, just because there's lack of evidence that that works, doesn't mean that it can't work. It just hasn't been shown yet. Somebody hasn't done that trial. Does that make sense? So lack of data does not always correlate to lack of efficacy. I'll be very clear for that. But as of right now, there are some institutions that are like, hey, if you're ruptured at term, we're just going to go straight to PIT. Forget your Bishop score for gauging whether we're going to give you a prostaglandin or a mechanical method. We're just going to go straight to PIT. And if you think that's like, nobody does that, man. Everybody uses the Bishop. Not the SOGC. That's the Society of Obstetrics Gynecology Canada. Let me read you their statement from their kind of practice bulletin from January 2023, just over a year ago, okay? Because it in two or three sentences, it gives this synopsis of what we're talking about here. That if you're ruptured at term, pretty much just go, it doesn't matter what your bishop is, whether you're going to give up for deciding whether you're going to use a mechanical or a pharmacological agent, just give them PIT. And there is evidence to back that up. This is the SOGC Clinical Practice Guidance, which is number 432B. This came out January 2023, again, Society of Obstetrics and Gynecology Canada. And this guidance is on cervical ripening. That's obviously the title and what we're talking about here. But let me read you this couple of sentences here, which makes the point that according to this Canadian guidance, it's like, hey, if you're ruptured pretty much at term, there's really no benefit of doing a Bishop score and pretty much just go straight to Pitocin and don't even worry about something else like a mechanical agent, okay? Now, I know we're focusing on mechanical agents, and we're going to get into that data here in a minute, is if they're unripened, should you use a mechanical agent? But we're making the point here that based on the data, whether it's a mechanical agent alone, a mechanical agent with something else like Pitocin or a prostaglandin, it's fancy. We're doing something. It doesn't seem to have much benefit over just straight Pitocin, even in the quote unripened cervix, because in this case, if they're ruptured, the cervix is not uninitiated. It's already initiated the process. Something is going on. And so that Pitocin, it's part of our own thing of being patient, will get her into labor. Okay, so here's the wording from the SOGC as it relates to mechanical methods and the Bishop score. Okay, here's what it says. Quote, since the Bishop score is irrelevant in the setting of term PROM, and since a higher number of pelvic exams can increase the risk of chorioamnionitis, a balloon catheter should be avoided with ruptured membranes, end quote. That is, I'm reading that directly from January 2023. Now, I know what you're saying. Who cares what the Canadians do? We're the USA, baby. I get that. But can we all just get along? Guys, they're not looking at imaginary data. There's wording, and there's a lot there that we're going to dissect here in a minute. That's pretty darn strong. Number one, first, did you catch, since the Bishop score is irrelevant in the setting of term PROM? I got to read that again. Since the Bishop score is irrelevant in the setting of term PROM. So you're like, why would they say that? Because it's for, the Bishop score was meant for the uninitiated cervix. If they're ruptured, it's initiated. Yeah, but their cervix is only 1-2. It's initiated. That's a different issue. Does that make sense? So again, if you're thinking, Choppa, you've lost your freaking mind. Of course we're going to use the Bishop. I use the Bishop too, guys. I use it not to determine pre-induction cervical treatment or not, but I do it as a prognostic to grade the change of the cervix. So, hey, she came in with a Bishop of 3. That doesn't mean I'm going to give her necessarily an agent like Cytotec or Cervidil or a mechanical method, but we're going to start her on Pitocin because she's initiated, and we're going to track. So in 2-4 hours, whatever, based on the clinical situation, we can reassess, run and limit our exams. And then, hey, 4 hours later, wow, her Bishop is now an 8. Fantastic. We're on the move. Keep on going. Does that make sense? So initially Bishop was for do not give pit, give something else to before you give pit. But when they're ruptured, it really should be, okay, she's ruptured, we're going to do a Bishop, and then we're going to track the Bishop as proof that we're doing something. Does that make sense? So listen to this wording again from SOGC. Since the Bishop score is irrelevant in the setting of term PROM. Wow. Well, there you go. And then it says a balloon catheter should be avoided. The reason they want to avoid it here in this case is because of the potential risk for infection, which is what we've already addressed. And that is borne out in the evidence. All right. Now, it goes into a deeper issue, which is, and I'm going to get into this because not every study has shown an increased risk of infection, not all of them. But when you take a look at them as the entire puzzle, not just one puzzle piece, which is one study, you're like, I don't know. You could do it, but it's probably not going to buy you any more evidence. I'm sorry, any more time as compared to just going straight to PIT. That sounds mind-blowing because are you saying you want to give somebody who's ruptured just straight Pitocin when they're like 2 centimeters? Yeah, why not? I mean, the process has initiated, all right? So, again, not wrong to give somebody Cytotec in that situation. Just know that if they've got this little subclinical floating around prostaglandins because they're ruptured and the uterus is already decompressed, you may kick them up into this weird pattern and now you're stuck. That's the catch. Send me a message, guys, honestly, on Facebook or on Insta, whether this has happened to you. We give her one dose and now you're like, damn. I tried to ripe her cervix and now I'm stuck because she's in this non-pitable pattern. Whereas if you can titrate it with like Pitocin, you probably wouldn't have gotten into that. So I digress. I'm going to tell you where the evidence is. Now, before we get into the mechanical, let me give you the evidence on where Cytotec use or E1 or E2 really doesn't bore out in the data for the unripe cervix when they're ruptured. I know. I'm going to focus on the balloon issue. I am. But just hold on a minute, because we got to lay this out, because some studies have used the balloon by itself. Some have used it together with oxytocin or prostaglandins. But I'm making the point here that pre-induction cervical treatment by a pharmacological method, then we do the mechanical method, maybe not all that effective. And one of these studies is old, right? Let me just say it here. It's from ACTA, Obstetrics and Gynecology Scandinavia, fantastic journal. It goes back to the 80s, man. And no, I was not practicing in the 80s. How old do you think I am? Jeez. So this was from 1981. And you know it's old because the title is Stimulation of Labor in Cases of Premature Rupture of Membranes at or Near Term. Okay. This used a consecutive randomized study of prostaglandin E2 tablets and intravenous oxytocin. Short of it is, they say, hey, you get prostaglandin E2 tablets. We're going to compare that to IV Pitocin, and we're going to see how this goes. This was not a huge number. This was 201 patients at or near term, right, with, quote, premature spontaneous rupture of membranes, which is a term we no longer use. All right, let's just say for what it is, it didn't work. Quote, although PGE2 tablets are a safe and convenient alternative to intravenous oxytocin, the investigation showed that intravenous oxytocin is preferable in cases of premature rupture of membranes with more than 6 hours without labor activity. All right. So these are patients who were ruptured for at least 6 hours and then came in like, okay, you get randomized to prostaglandins, you go straight to PIT. PIT seemed to work. Now, I know what you're thinking. Guys, I'm not going to leave you. Don't worry, with a 1981 publication, but it makes the point here that this has been looked at for a while. And another study was back in, again, 1990, but we're going to catch up here in a minute. In 1990, this was in the Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and let me show you what they found in this study. This also was a small study. It was 50 primogravid patients at term with ruptured membranes before labor had initiated, all with an unripe cervix, okay? And they were allocated randomly to be managed by vaginal prostaglandin E2 tablets or intravenous Pitocin. Exact same thing we just talked about. Short of it is, what they found was, quote, we conclude that there is no advantage to initial treatment with prostaglandin E2 vaginal tablets over the use of oxytocin infusion. Guys, 1990. You know I'm not. If you think I'm going to leave you with a paper from 1981 and 1990, man, you all don't know me. But I'm making the case here. So now let's jump from those. Let's leave that and time travel. Let's go forward to 2019. That's a little bit more recent, right? It's the exact same kind of concept here. This came out of Archives in Medical Science. Quote, labor induction in term nulliparous women with premature rupture of membranes, oxytocin versus dinoprostone. Remember, dinoprostone is E2. All of these E2s are typically dinoprostone. E1 is Cytotec, misoprostol, okay? So notice the terms here. Again, this says premature rupture because this got accepted for print before the ACOG was in 2018. That came out of the pre-labor, but this had already been accepted for publication. So labor induction in term nullips with premature rupture of membranes, oxytocin versus dinoprostone. And guys, I am not against using Cytotec at all. It's just when they're ruptured, and I've done it. I'm not trying to say I haven't done it. You're like, man, she's 1 to 2. I'm like, I give it to the residents. What do y'all want to do? Wow, she's not ripe. Let's give her Cytotec. Great. Let's do it. Then we're going to talk about it because let me just say what's going to happen. We're going to give her a dose and then we're going to get this. Oh my gosh, I can't give her another dose. She's contracting too much. I can't give her PIT. And we're going to stare at ourselves and twirl our fingers. But let's give it to her. Let's see what happens. Because that's part. It's not a wrong treatment, guys. I just want to be clear. Giving somebody who's ruptured over 34 weeks a Cytotec or an E2 is not wrong. My point is, does it work? Not so much. And the same thing with mechanical. Is it wrong to use it? Well, no, it's not like it's right or wrong, even though the manufacturer calls it a straight contraindication. If they're ruptured, that is completely off-label, but so is a lot. It's giving Cytotec off-label. And using the balloon with a prostaglandin is a straight contraindication according to the manufacturer, according to the Cook manufacturer. It's like, don't use them together. Because it can increase tachycystole, increase contractions. Well, that's exactly what I'm trying to get it to do. So just because it's contraindicated, which means that the original trial didn't actually study that, or it was found to be a true harm. In this case, it wasn't studied. doesn't necessarily mean that it's not efficacious, right? A lot of things that were traditionally contraindicated, like misoprostol in labor, have good clinical value. So the manufacturer does say that use of the balloon, of the Cook balloon, in ruptured membranes is contraindicated, and we'll leave it at that, knowing that we do things off-label all the time. So let's go now to archives in medical sciences in 2019, which is, again, much. So we've left 1980, 1990s, and now get to more current day. And they used vaginal dinoprostone compared to IV. These are all with the unripe cervixes with PROM. Guys, exactly what we're talking about here. Not the mechanical stuff. We're going to tackle that next. But I'm making the point here that if you're going to use a Bishop score to figure out should we give her Sativec or not, you do you. It's not wrong. It's probably not going to help very much. Here's what they concluded in 2019. Vaginal dinoprostone appears to be relatively inefficient method of inducing labor compared with oxytocin in term pregnancies with PROM and an unfavorable cervix. However, dinoprostone may maintain uterine contractions as effectively as oxytocin once uterine contractions are established. So you're like, huh? Short of it is, it had no benefit over Pitt. But hey, once you start contracting, then you're on the road. Well, you think? I mean, once you have uterine contractions, whether it's Pitocin or Sativec, of course you're going to be on the road. So that second part of the conclusion was kind of dumb. But nonetheless, the point is being made that vaginal dinoprostone appears to be a relatively inefficient method of inducing labor compared to Pitt in the unfavorable cervix group. Guys, these are even in those that have a Bishop score less than 5, all right? Or others say less than 6, whatever, we're talking about the same thing. So 5 or less. So this is the catch here. It's not wrong to use it. It's just, is it data-driven? Not so much. But again, there's scant data on this, and absence of data does not correlate to absence of efficacy. None of that has to do with the balloon. I think now that we've settled that there is some data to go straight to Pitt in these patients, and that Bishop score is great to document as evidence of progress, but not necessarily as a discriminator, the referee between pre-induction cervical treatment or not. Now let's get on to mechanical stuff. Thank you for being part of our podcast family. We really are grateful and thankful that you've chosen to take this journey of medical education with us. You're listening to Clinical Pearls. Yes, the manufacturer lists ruptured membranes as a contraindication to Cook balloon use. We get that. But remember, we do a lot of things off-label. The question is, what does the data show? Does it actually work, either alone or in combination with another agent like prostaglandins or Pitocin? But this goes back to 1998, and this is not the Cook balloon. This was a single balloon, like a Foley, because remember that Cook wasn't FDA approved until 2013. But this came out of Obstetrics and Gynecology Investigations. The title was Balloon Catheter for Induction of Labor in Nulliparous Women with Pre-Labor Rupture of Membranes at Term, a Preliminary Report. Remember, this was preliminary, 1998. Now look where we've gotten. Like, yeah, sure, use it if you want to. But what does the data show? So this was only an N. This was a pilot study of 18 patients. And this is pretty ballsy because these were patients that were all nullips who had ruptured membranes for 48 hours. Wow. I mean, so already at super high risk of infections. You're like, hey, you broke your bag 48 hours ago. Hey, come on in. Here's what we can try to do. We have lots to cover here. So this is just the foundation. We're going all the way back to 1998. So let me just read you what they found as we get to more recent data, including a systematic review and the latest RCT from April 2023 from the Pink Journal, AJOG MFM. Okay. So back in 1998, they stated, quote, 66% of those women who had the Foley balloon placed delivered vaginally. Yeah, 66%. That's not great. But they go on to say, clinical and neonatal outcome data did not differ as compared with term pregnant women who entered labor spontaneously or who had a ripe cervix, a Bishop score greater than 5, and whose labor was induced with oxytocin at that 48-hour mark. All right, so it was, you came in 48 hours ruptured, great. You can get the balloon, you can wait to go into labor by yourself, or do Pitocin. And they're like, I don't know, it seemed to work. Remember, this was a small pilot, an N of 18. So they stated, this preliminary report indicates that the balloon catheter method might be a well-tolerated, safe, and effective method for induction of labor after rupture of membranes that term. So, again, a preliminary, it was a pilot back in 1998, and very forward-thinking, because you notice the title, it was Balloon Catheter for Induction of Labor in Nulliparous Women with Pre-Labor Rupture of Membranes. They didn't say premature labor, premature rupture. They said pre-labor, the term that we're using now. Woo, super forward thinking. All right, everyone, for sake of time and to get to the big yield stuff, we're going to leave that pilot investigation and then go to 2021 with a systematic review and meta-analysis from names that we've already mentioned several times in the past on this channel, including Vincenzo Bergea. And this is the McKean Systematic Review. This came out in the Gray Journal, the American Journal of OBGYN, 2021. Now, there's been two big things that have happened since that, a publication, an RCT in 2022 and another one in 2023. Not part of this, okay? And we're going to cover both of those. the short of it is they're going to offset each other, all right? The one in 2022 was like, woohoo, I think this is a great idea. 2023 was like, it didn't do anything. Wah, wah. So the net effect of those is going to be nil, all right? So yes, that they're not included in this 2021 review because they weren't out yet. But when you consider that their net effect is pretty much nil, I don't know if that really changes anything. So back to the systematic review and meta-analysis. Here's what they found. This meta-analysis was of RCTs. It was 4 trials. The N was 605. Right? So it's not thousands of patients, but just lets you know that these really aren't huge studies, okay? And here's what they found. They did find an increased risk of IAI, mostly in term PROM patients who were managed with a balloon catheter. Right. So there we go. So, yes, is there any evidence that using this when they're ruptured increases the chance of IAI? Absolutely. Quote, compared with any pharmacological agent alone, there was a statistical difference there with the relative risk of 1.84. Compared with oxytocin alone, the relative risk was 3.20. And it stated that the frequency of other outcomes, including endometritis and suspected neonatal infection, were similar in both groups. So I told you, right? Thankfully, NICU admissions because of sepsis to the child and postpartum arthritis typically don't make a bump because you're going to diagnose IAI. That's your biggest jump there. And then that is what's treated. So there was both a trend towards higher rates of IAI and a true rate of intramyonic infection when you combine all of these results together. Again, systematic review from 2021. So these authors concluded, quote, the use of intracervical balloon catheter for induction of labor with PROM more than doubled the risk of intramyonic infection compared to induction with pharmacological methods, specifically oxytocin. Quote, the increased risk of IAI was most significantly clear when the intracervical balloon catheter group was compared with oxytocin, as rates of IAI were 3.2-fold higher than those treated with intracervical balloon catheter. These findings support the use of pharmacological agents, specifically oxytocin, for induction of labor in PROM, end quote. Interesting, right? So, and plus, it makes sense. I mean, what is the job of the balloon, whether it's a single balloon or a double balloon? What you're trying to do is provide mechanical stripping, right? So if they have a high rupture, if they have a high leak, and they have a big 4 bag, then potentially maybe that could be a thing because you're still ripening, you're still stripping the membrane. That's what a single balloon or the double balloon is supposed to do, increase those prostaglandins as the membrane gets stripped. But if you're ruptured, you're not stripping a membrane. You're just putting it into the uterine cavity. You see what I mean? So it's like mechanically, theoretically, it doesn't make sense. The mechanical thing is still there. You're still putting pressure on the cervix to release local prostaglandins for sure. But you're not getting the membrane stripping effect if you are in the cavity. Plus, the potential for cord prolapse makes me nervous. But that's me. So this systematic review and meta-analysis concluded that if you've got PROM, oxytocin is the way to go. The following year, in 2022, there was a separate randomized trial. This was the Rubapro trial that came out of Journal of Clinical Medicine in 2022. This is the double balloon catheter plus oxytocin versus dinoprostovaginal insert at term for ruptured membranes. Again, this was an RCT called the RUBAPRO. So Rubapro, the Rubapro trial. Double balloon catheter with PIT plus dinoprostone to see what was going to happen. Who was going to win, all right? So this is exactly what we're talking about here, but this was not the balloon by itself. It was a balloon used together with oxytocin versus basically Cervidil, okay, the dinoprostone insert. These patients were recruited from February 2018 to March 2019, so about a year, and they randomized 80 patients. 40 were allocated to each group, all right? So 40 had the balloon and PIT, 40 had Cervidil. Now, I told you that the two studies that weren't part of the 2021 meta-analysis were going to cancel themselves out in terms of what they found, and it's basically true, because this one was like, hey, this could work, this is okay, and they didn't increase the risk of chorio or postpartum metritis, or any adverse maternal or neonatal outcome. With a catch, the overall results had actually no benefit. It was only beneficial. The time interval to delivery was only shortened with the balloon and Pitocin together in nulliparous women. That's it. Everybody else on multips, it didn't have any difference compared to Pitocin alone. So again, no change in chorio, no change in postpartum metritis, no increase in maternal or neonatal outcomes. Those are all good things, but overall as a group, no difference compared to Pitocin by itself, but it seemed to work with nulliparous women. So you're like, hey, okay. So see, that's where people hang on to. They're like, oh, the Rubapro trial showed that this could work in nulliparous women. Absolutely. One puzzle piece compared to the entire puzzle. Remember that? Now let's leave 2022 and go to April 2023, and we're going to start wrapping this up. We're going to leave everybody with some clinical implications here at the end. All right, so in the traditional he said, she said of publications, right, we just leave 2022 like, hey, this could be a thing, it could work. Then we get to the pink journal, the American Journal of OBGYN MFM, and this randomized trial, the title of which is Evaluation of Mechanical and Non-Mechanical Methods of Cervix Ripening in Women with Pre-Labor Rupture of Membranes, an RCT. Exact same thing that we're talking about here, all right? Now, this was, again, a randomized trial. The inclusion was nulliparous and multiparous patients who were at or beyond 34 weeks. Very easy. Two groups. One received sublingual misoprostol Sedatec, and then the other received a transcervical Foley balloon for cervical ripening. Now, notice what we said here. Some are double balloons, some are single balloons. It doesn't matter. We're talking about, as a category, mechanical ripening. Now, I know someone's going to probably send me a message. Yeah, you needed to do a sub-analysis or another episode just on the cook. I'm not doing that. It's as a category. So as a category, is the evidence there that mechanical ripening of the cervix in the unfavorable cervix, which again, we already talked about, is not really a thing because unripened and uninitiated are different concepts. Is this really worth doing? And again, it's not contraindicated in practice, because people are doing it, although it's contraindicated by the manufacturer. See, it's got so many little details here. My thing is, let the data do this, the talking, and let's see what it shows. So we have this 2021 systematic review that says, I don't know, guys, if they're ruptured, probably go straight to PIT. And then we just covered the information that, hey, if they're ruptured, I don't know, prostaglandins probably doesn't do much. Wow. Remember what I said? Just going straight to PIT. I never discourage anybody from using Sedatec when somebody who is a, quote, unfavorable cervix and they come in ruptured. I'm not against that. Just let that play out. But I'm telling you that what has been published, and even in my own experiences, you give them that Sedatec, the uterus is already irritated because it's ruptured. And then you're like, well, yeah, that was, again, 4, 6, 8 hours ago, and we're just staring at her because now we're stuck. Let me know if that happens to you or if that's just only in the CHOPPA world. So what happened here with this RCT, they looked at the primary outcome was time from intervention to delivery, with secondary outcomes including how they delivered, maternal and neonatal results like chorio, Apgar scores, neonatal sepsis, and even neonatal asphyxia with blood gases, arterial blood gases from the cord, all right? This was a total group of 104 participants. Again, not huge numbers, okay? Total of 104 that were split between the two groups. Short of it is super non-impressive with a single balloon. In their conclusion, quote, cervical ripening with a Foley catheter was associated with a longer duration of ripening and time from induction to delivery than cervical ripening with misoprostol. The cesarean delivery rate and the maternal and neonatal infection rates actually were not different between the methods, end quote. So that's good news. But it took longer than just giving Cytotec. And now remember, so in this RCT, just 1 year ago, guys, almost 1 year ago, because this was from April of 2023. So in 3 days, it would be exactly a year. They said, wow, Cytotec seems to work better. The least fast was giving the balloon with these unripened cervixes with PROM. The question is, well, it would have been best to have a third arm with going straight to Pitocin, because it seems that, based on the other data, maybe that would have been even faster. So in this randomized controlled trial from the Pink Journal just last year, Foley took the longest to ripen and to put into labor. Well, how about that? I told you this was going to cancel out the one from 2022. Before we leave with our parting words, a quick thing from the college, because this is addressed in ACOG's practice bulletin from 2020, which is number 217 on pre-labor rupture of membranes. They have a little blurb on this about mechanical use infections with ruptured membranes, and it's super easy, super brief, because it's like meh. I mean, literally, if you could take down the words into three letters, it's meh. Here's what ACOG says as of 2020. Again, I get that it's 2024, but until this is redone, this is the last word on it from the college. Quote, infection is a concern with mechanical methods of cervical ripening, such as a Foley balloon, but there are insufficient data on which to base a firm recommendation for mechanical ripening in the setting of PROM, end quote. Well, there you go. Now let's give you our last words. All right, podcast family. So as we wrap this up, what's the take home here? Hey, you do you. Come up with a protocol, and if you want to do it, that's absolutely fine. What the evidence, where the most of the data is heavy, is if they come in, especially at term or even over 34 weeks, and they're ruptured, regardless of cervical status, just go straight to PIT. The cervix is initiated, though it may not be favorable. You see how those are different things. Now, if you want to do cervical ripening with a mechanical method or prostaglandins, that's fine. Just know what the data show. It doesn't seem to add any benefit. So do it because you're comfortable with that. Do it because you like the cervix to be more dilated before you give Pitocin. Whatever. But no, don't try to, let's not try to trick ourselves that we by giving her Cytotec, we're going to shorten the induction time. It doesn't seem to show that. That giving dinoprostone seems to shorten the induction time. Doesn't seem to show that. And the same goes for either single or double balloon catheter. With the majority of the data, the entire puzzle, once you step back, not just look at one puzzle piece going, I don't know, guys. It just kind of seems to increase IAI. And then the rebuttal to that is, well, there's no increase in sepsis. We're going to treat her anyway. Yeah, but IAI sets up that inflammatory cascade in the child. Remember that. That pro-inflammatory condition in the child is something we don't want to have, because in some studies, that's been linked to poor neurodevelopmental outcomes down the road. And none of these studies have looked at that. These have all been peripartum results. So just because you can treat IAI doesn't mean I want the patient to get it. I mean, that's not good thinking. So is there data that balloon catheter, single or double, can work for PROM? Absolutely, but it's not great. Well, how about that? So I think we'll leave it at that. I'm not against, again, using Cytotec for PROM patients. Just be aware that it can kind of trigger this dysfunctional labor. And based on the data, it seems to be going straight to Pitocin kind of seems to be the best gig. All right, let's take it home. All right, podcast family, that brings us to a wrap. As always, we're thankful for you, and we're glad you're part of our podcast community. We'll see you on another episode of Clinical Pearls.